and welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today, he returns, Postal Inspector for the Philadelphia Division of our Post Office. George Clark is back. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Laura. Thank you for having me.
We are sitting down on Leap Day because annually, the first week of March is National Consumer Protection Week. And we always think, I'm never going to fall victim to a scheme. I'm not going to fall into some fraud. And yet we do. And that is the purpose of the week, isn't it?
That absolutely brings some awareness and hopefully preventing some people from falling victim to the many, many different fraud schemes out there.
And there are so many. And before the show began, we each related. We know someone you'd never suspect of being, I don't want to say gullible, because we're all gullible, the right message, but almost fell victim to a scheme. So let's first off, though, start about with a discussion of what is the Postal Inspection Service? Who are you?
Well, Laura, the Postal Inspection Service is a law enforcement agency, a federal law enforcement agency that's been around for 200 years. We trace our roots back to collecting revenue for Ben Franklin when he was running the post office. And we now are across the country investigating a myriad of crimes that occur in or that affect the mail stream or the U.S. mail or its employees. So, you know, narcotics investigations, mail theft, mail fraud, identity theft, security, violence in and around the post office. These are all things that we put a lot of resources to, and that's who we are.
You do full, I mean, you are a police force. You do full investigations. You end up testifying. You do research. You do the whole gamut.
We do all that. We investigate. We interview. We collect records. We conduct search warrants. We knock down doors. We arrest people. Knock down doors occasionally, but that's after we get a warrant from a judge, of course. I don't want anyone to have the wrong idea here. We testify in grand juries. We testify in trials. And we work closely with our colleagues at the other federal law enforcement agencies and the state and local law enforcement agencies and the prosecutors, the U.S. Attorney's Office and the DA's offices here in Pennsylvania. We're just like any other law enforcement agency. We have labs. We have an academy. And we do a myriad of different things.
A lot of these investigations, I'm going to guess, cross boundaries because it's how sophisticated these fraudsters are.
Well, listen, I mean, it seems sophisticated. They're taking advantage of, I sent you a letter that was allegedly on Department of Justice letterhead, but they are old-fashioned. You know, getting a letter from someone official, it's not hard to, you know, on all the computers that we all carry, hard to make. And it's scaring. In this case, it's a letter from Department of Justice telling someone that they're under investigation and that they need to call the investigator. I'm sure if that number was called, you'd speak to someone who would have a script and after some time would tell you you need to pay them some money. I didn't call the number, so I don't know exactly what their scheme was, but they would tell you to call them and then they would get money out of you. And this is what I want to say. I mean, I just read a story recently about a woman somewhere in the United States who received a phone call, a little bit different, from someone alleging to be an FBI agent. And that person told the woman her identity had been stolen and that the FBI was conducting an investigation into her stolen identity and needed her to fund their undercover efforts and needed her to go, you know, either buy some cryptocurrency and send it to them or buy a gift card and send them the gift card number so they could pull the money off the gift card. I don't want to speak for the FBI, but I am quite confident in saying, and I know our agency, we would fund our own undercover efforts. You're never going to get a phone call asking you to fund, you know, something like that. So this letter that came from the Department of Justice telling someone that they're under investigation and call these numbers, you know, it's just false. And the other thing I'd say is, in this instance, we don't send you a letter telling you you're under investigation. If you're under investigation, you may never know it. And if you do know it, it's because we came and knocked on your door and said, we want to talk to you. And we showed you our identification and we went from there.
You know, and when I mentioned sophistication of these criminals, if you were to call these numbers, I would suspect that the number that shows up on the ID is going to be, in this case, U.S. Department of Justice.
Well, I mean, I think in that letter, they're both 202 area code phone numbers, which is Washington, D.C., which I guess would give some people a level of comfort that they're calling the Department of Justice. But today, with the internet, which has opened a world of crime and fraud and deceit and deception, It's very easy to legally go on and rent a phone number forever, how long you want it, and anywhere in the world. So if you want to appear right here in Philadelphia, if you wanted to appear, you were calling someone from Washington, you could rent a 202 phone number. So it's not hard. And then to up it a notch, if you wanted to have your caller ID reflect you are calling from the Federal Bureau of Investigation or the Department of Justice or the State Licensing Board, you could type that in to this rented phone number. And the internet has opened up a world of possibilities for good and unfortunately for bad as well.
Well, when we deal with the post office, the Postal Inspection Service, you have three main areas. And both of our friends, fell into two of them. You've got investment frauds, romance frauds, and fake investigative frauds. And so do you want to parse them down and give us those red flags or just explain how they work so we might recognize them?
Sure. So this year's National Consumer Protection Week theme is investment frauds. But it doesn't really matter. Every year there's a different theme, but the frauds don't change. Investment frauds are going to be people soliciting you as a potential investor in stocks, bonds, commodities, an investor in a company. And the red flags I'll get to in a second, they transcend, I think, all these frauds. Romance frauds are, you go online, you meet someone on one of the dating websites or on Facebook or another social media you're using, and you make a connection and it gets intense and it can get I don't have personal experience, but I have friends who unfortunately have fallen for this. It can get very intense, excitingly intense. But next thing you know, they're asking for money. I have a problem. I'm stuck. I have a project. I'm out of money. I'm going to be kicked out of my apartment. The police in some foreign country have detained me and I have to pay them. I need money from you. The reasons are myriad and that should be a red flag. You've never met this person and they need money. Fake investigative frauds, which you just talked about. There's lottery frauds, which you receive some indication you've won a lottery. If you haven't played a lottery, you haven't won the lottery. And I'll just add, it's illegal to play lotteries in the U.S. mail. So if you receive something in the U.S. mail saying you've won a lottery, it's probably a problem. But nonetheless, if you receive it via email, if you haven't played it, you haven't won it. They say pay taxes before we send you earnings. Another thing to think about in a lottery fraud, well, you don't owe taxes until you receive the money. You don't need to prepay taxes. When you win the Pennsylvania lottery, we all see it when it happens. Where do the taxes come out of? They come out of the winnings. You don't prepay the Pennsylvania Lottery Commission to get your money. So licensing frauds, we were just talking about, where whether you're a lawyer, a nurse, a doctor, a hairdresser, anyone that needs a license from the state of Pennsylvania, they'll get pressure, a myriad of different schemes to renew their license. Their license is threatened because of some issue. And how do you solve these problems? Pay me money. And some of these frauds, there might be a sliding scale. Some just might be flat illegal. Others might be unnecessary. Someone is offering to renew your license for you. I'm sure people have licenses, they have to pay to renew it. You don't have to pay a company to renew your license. Now, they may follow through and renew your license, but they're taking a cut off the top. So, that's maybe not illegal, but you have to pay attention. The state of Pennsylvania, you send them a check, your license is renewed. You don't need to pay a third party to do that. So, common red flags for all of these frauds. A, they need money. That suddenly comes up out of nowhere. A government investigative agency is going to ask you as a victim to help fund their investigation. A romance fraud, someone you've never met asking you for money for something ridiculous or absurd or, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't happen. And hopefully many of us have been in some sort of relationship and you don't start getting asked for thousands of dollars right off the bat. Investment frauds, obviously the point of investment fraud is money. So those are, if not red flags, those should be big pause points. Speed, this needs to happen right now. This investment opportunity is going to go away tomorrow. If you don't invest now, you're going to miss it. This romance fraud, if you don't send me the money, I'm never going to talk to you again. I hate you. All of a sudden that exciting talk turns to scary talk. Licensing fraud that we were just talking about, if you don't pay this money, obviously the upshot, the threat is your license is going to go away. You could be in trouble. You could get arrested. Do this now. That is a major red flag. And let me just say, at least to the extent that these frauds involve some sort of alleged governmental agency, whether it's a licensing board, Department of Justice, investigative agency, we don't work that way. Pay us or we're going to arrest you tomorrow is not how we work. There's an immense amount of due process goes into investigations or regulatory actions people have an immense amount of opportunity to fix the problems that they may have unwittingly fallen into. Government agencies don't just willy-nilly come and take your license, put you in jail, or something like that. So, you know, and as far as like investment frauds, I'd warn people, you know, if someone's trying to pitch you a company, an investment opportunity at a seminar, we've seen these, I'm sure, on TV, late night infomercials come, or you might get a mailing or an email saying, come sign up for this seminar at a hotel and, you know, we'll keep it local in King of Prussia. You know, we'll give you breakfast or lunch or dinner and you're going to get pitched an investment idea. I would warn you that a good company, a real company, a company that has something going on is almost certainly not raising money that way. They have access to major capital, to major banks, to major private equity, hedge funds, whatever the case might be, that have a business model, resources to do due diligence before they make investments, and their business model is to make investments. So you go into a seminar, you have a few extra dollars in your pocket, you think, this is how I can make some extra money for my retirement, for my kids. It's more likely an opportunity that you're just going to lose that extra money in your pocket. And, you know, I think people should really be wary of that. You know, call your broker, call a major mutual funds, put your money in a stock market fund where a professional's managing it, and stay away from these fly-by-night opportunities.
Well, you just said to the person who might be falling victim to an investment fraud to call your broker or call your bank. And that's one of the things these fraudsters try desperately to keep you from doing, is to get anyone else involved. My friend, which was the licensing issue, she was told that, well, whatever was happening, it was probably an inside job, and that she couldn't trust her coworkers. One of them obviously had stolen her identification and personal information to commit this crime under her name.
That is absolutely something these people want to do, which is why they are pushing the speed aspect, but they don't want you to take the time to talk to someone, whether it's your neighbor in your office, whether it's your physical neighbor where you live, whether it's your kids, or they don't want you to take the time to use Google. Let's just be honest. I have a lot of qualms about what the internet has opened up, but the internet has also made information readily available. So Google, you have an investment opportunity, get on that phone. What are other people saying about this? You get something in the mail that seems like a lottery scheme or something, Google it. You know, the El Gordo out of Spain. All of a sudden, you will see many, many people saying, this is a scam, don't do it. In the story you were telling me earlier, someone, you receive a phone call saying your license is at risk because of a rental car in South Texas that has drugs on it was just stopped. Wow, that doesn't even make any sense. But Google it, as you said you did, and immediately the first things you'll see is scam, 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 scam.
That one seemed to identify the medical profession especially. But yeah, I was floored. All I had to do was just type in the circumstances. I just put in rental truck full of drugs under my name in Texas. It came up immediately. And it even explained how many, you know, when it had circulated. It was like the tide. It had rolled through about 4 years earlier. And here it had come back again. All I did was type in the circumstances and there it came.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an amazing, powerful tool. Amazingly powerful tool. Like I said, it also opens the door to all sorts of, you know, fraud and fake offers. And you got to be careful about the websites. But, you know, you just sort of glance at the headlines and that should be enough to tell you, this is a problem. I don't want to be a part of it. Whether it's an investment fraud, a lottery scheme, a licensing fraud, you know, an investigative fraud, and they're myriads. We're not even touching all of them. Real estate frauds, fake land deal frauds. You get an offer for land in Utah. Really, you live here? You're going to buy land from someone who's calling you or sending you a mailing for a piece of land in Utah that seems enticingly cheap? And wow, I'd always want to live in Utah. Your money's going to go down a deep hole. You're never going to see it again. And I don't think you're going to have any land in Utah.
And the funny thing is, I always said that if I was going to be a con man, the first thing I would do would be hire a Harvard grad to go over my work. Because this note that you gave me, the preliminary investigations notice, it has poor typing, and I found two grammar errors in it.
I saw some grammar errors in there as well. And yeah, that's another red flag. If the English is poor, if the writing is poor, if there's an accent, I certainly don't want to disparage foreigners. But, you know, we find that a lot of these fraud schemes, unfortunately, originate and end up abroad. It makes it very hard for United States law enforcement to go after them to get the money back. Once your money is overseas, I don't want to say quite near an act of God, but it is very hard to get that money back. So the flip side of that is a lot of this stuff is originating from people who aren't native English speakers, or if they are, or if they have very good grasp of English, they've been taught a different sort of English than what we speak here in the United States of America. The syntax might be different. The grammar might be different. They might spell words differently. So pay attention to that. And if you're on the phone with them, you know, pay attention to how they sound. Do they sound like they come from Texas? Do they sound like they come from California? Or do they sound like they have an accent and English isn't their native language? And, you know, another red flag that government or any legitimate, you know, person who needs to be paid isn't going to ask you to go get Bitcoin, go to a Bitcoin ATM, or go online and figure out and walk you through how to buy Bitcoin, or ask you to go to Apple and buy an Apple gift card, or go to CVS and buy some sort of debit gift card. I mean, that is not a legitimate governmental way of accepting payment that I've ever seen. I don't think, in my personal experience, I've never seen a company that I'm dealing with ask to be paid that way. And the reason why fraudsters want you to go get a gift card or go get Bitcoin, it's twofold. A, the money transfers quickly. You know, you go buy a $500 gift card at CVS or any location that you pick, and then you give a fraudster the number on the gift card, they can access that money immediately and it's gone. Bitcoin, similarly, once you send it, it's gone. And in both cases, it is not untraceable by any means, but it's difficult to trace. So we think cash is king, but the thing about cash for a fraudster, if you're sitting here in Philadelphia, you got to send it to them somehow, whether it's through the mail or FedEx or UPS. That takes time. And that gives an opportunity for someone like me, and I've done this many times, to get a phone call and intercept it and stop it. Checks, same thing. Checks take time to process. You got to send it, and then someone has to deposit it, and two banks have to talk to each other. There's days that that transpire there, and it's time for that check to be stopped. And you might have an opportunity still to call your bank even after several days and say stop payment on that check. Credit cards, you have, you know, if they take a credit card payment, that's interesting that they're a fraudster and they have a credit card processing account. They won't for long, but you know, your credit card company has like a 30-day opportunity to pull that money back. So, you know, credit cards offer a level of protection. You might realize 10 days later, I've just been defrauded. You call your credit card company and say, I want to contest that charge. They'll do a little investigation. And if it's a fraud, they'll figure it out real quick and they'll pull that money back. So they ask to get paid by these gift cards or Bitcoins. Now, occasionally, if people are unwilling to do that, they'll ask you to send cash. Also, not really a legitimate way to interact with, you know, real businesses, real government agencies. You know, if the U.S., you know, district court clerk received an envelope full of cash, they'd probably be a little undone as to what to do with it, you know, ostensibly to pay a fine or whatever like that. They wouldn't know what to do. So these are red flags. How am I being asked to pay? Should absolutely be a red flag.
Before we get into what one does and what are some of the solutions to it, there's one other area we didn't hit today, and that is work from home.
Mm. Work from home. Yeah, work from home has long been an area ripe for fraud. You know, you can stuff envelopes or you can write emails or, you know, you can, you know, go to Walmart and do a mystery shopper survey for, you know, 10 minutes a day and then do the rest of the work at home. The work at home offers are numerous and almost always are in connection to some sort of fraud. If you're stuffing envelopes, you might be stuffing you might be stuffing fake checks into envelopes that you then send out to other potential victims, and you probably won't get paid anything. In fact, you'll probably be out the money. I've seen, you know, multiples of these cases where people are stuffing envelopes, they're stuffing fake checks into envelopes, they're mailing those checks. We get notified because people are receiving these fake checks, and we go talk to them, and they say, well, I had to buy a special printer, I had to buy, you know, paper, and I was told that this was all legitimate, and I was stuffing these envelopes and sending these checks out for, you know, any number of excuses, and they hadn't gotten paid, and they're out several hundred or $1,000 based, you know, because the fancy printer they had to buy, the fancy check paper they had to buy, and, you know, the fraudsters will move on to someone else. But they do this because it gets the stuff in the mail stream domestically. They interact with this poor work at home victim over the internet, and they don't have to ship in counterfeit checks that, you know, customs or my agency intercepts. They deal with someone at their computer who then prints it all out and drops it in the mail stream. There's no customs there at all. So work at home schemes are ripe for fraud.
Well, obviously, false investigative schemes that target licenses, that's barely that's a set group. But in both the work at home and the romance, you've got somebody who is vulnerable. Work at home, you're looking for work, obviously. Romance, you are thrilled that you've got this. They've targeted victims. How do they find the right person to scam? And then we do need to talk about what happens if we find out that we are being scammed or we get approached.
So, Laura, how do they do it? They post job opportunities on Monster.com or any number of the online job search engines for work-at-home schemes, and they know that people who are generally on those websites are looking for work. Some of them might actually be desperate for work, and they might be looking for work in places where it's hard to find a job. Smaller towns and in far off places where there just isn't a lot of high paying opportunities. And as far as the romance schemes, they have rooms of young kids, and when I say they, the fraudsters overseas, little computer rooms where they are posting on all the different dating websites. They're entering Facebook chat groups and making connections, and then you put 100 hooks in the sea, you just need one fish to bite.
So we're walking into these ourselves, most of them.
Absolutely. Most of them, we are absolutely walking into these ourselves. Listen, the work at home scheme, you're looking for an opportunity on Monster.com or Indeed or whatever, and you need work and you're getting increasingly desperate. Or the lottery schemes, which we see a lot of. I mean, let me be up front. Most people and vast majority of people get those emails or get those mailings and they throw them out. But, someone who's feeling a little financially desperate might be like, oh, this is my opportunity. And then, the hook is in. And what's sad is that person's already a little financially desperate. Maybe they have a few extra dollars. Maybe they borrow some money from friends and family, all the while not telling them really why, because you don't tell them why, to get this winning. So yeah, and most of the time we walk into these schemes and we walk into them because we have some need, some emotional need or financial need or something like that.
All right, so we've walked in, we've knocked on the door, someone has answered. How do we question what we are seeing? And if we're approached, in the case of licensing, if we're approached by somebody, what should we do?
Well, I mean, there are going to be some, and we've talked about them, common tools. One is talk to people. Go to Google, look up what is in front of you. I have a note, a letter, I have a phone call, and this is what they're offering. You hang up and say, I got to think about it. You get an email. You have information in front of you. Plug it into Google, whether it's, is Department of Justice investigating me? Scam. This is scam. Or the licensing board in your instance. Pay attention to the red flags that we've been talking about. You have to do this now. You need to do it today. Literally today. You need to go to CVS and buy that gift card. Pay attention to the speed. And also, what are they asking you to do? Wait, you need to get paid with a CVS gift card? No, that doesn't make sense. Hang up on them.
Well, then you just said hang up on them. What if we've got somebody on the line and it's obvious? I get these calls sometimes. And I think, well, should I be reporting this to somebody? Should I be opening the door for you to investigate and catch this person? Or is it just hang up, toss the email, and just walk away from the situation?
I don't want to say don't report it, Laura, but I want to be real with your audience as well. The leads that come out of that phone call are very, very slim. The phone number is probably spoofed. The person's name that you're talking to is not real. I mean, they say they're John Jackman, and they're really, who knows? But they're not that. They're not John Jackman or Paul Smith or whatever they say. So the leads that come out of that are really, really, really slim. People can go to our website, www.uspis.gov, and complain and include as much information as possible, the phone number, the email, if it's a mailing, the return address, whatever, pictures if they can take them with their cell phone and attach them, is all useful. But I can't promise there will be an immediate call, especially if you haven't been victimized. This is what we're talking about, is preventing victimization. It is the best way to reduce the amount of fraud in this way, is just to prevent victimization.
But if we've already fallen victim, if we bought those gift cards and given them the number, or if we have sent money or wired money to our loved one who's building a missionary in somewhere and they needed to pay off the contractor that day, if we've already done it and we discover that we are being had, what can be done?
Now we're talking about getting some real leads. If you sent money, if you wired money, gotten a gift card, and someone's pulled it off, we're talking about leads that can be followed. Because at the end of the day, you know, that is a real transaction in there. They need it to go to a real account, or they have to deposit a check into a real account. Someone has to do it. So those are absolute leads that we can follow. So what to do? Contact your financial institution if you realize you've been defrauded. I mean, that should be one of your, especially if it involved your bank account because of a check or a wire. Let them know so that they can put some sort of, you know, they can help you monitor your account. And then go to our website or the FBI's website or the Federal Trade Commission's website. Ours is, again, www.uspis.gov. We have several different types of complaints people can file. In this case, we have mail fraud complaints. Include as much information as possible. I can't stress that enough. What happened, what you communicated with, where you sent your money. If you have, again, you know, with cell phones these days, we can take pictures. If there's pictures you can take of the check, if you have stuff from your bank, if you can gather information from your bank, if it involves a check or a wire, that's very helpful to us. Those are the leads that we would start to follow. You know, again, phone numbers, emails, return addresses on envelopes. If you got a mailing, keep the mailing. Keep the letter, keep the envelope, so that we can see, you know, we have tools to determine where those things were printed, where they were mailed from. And those are leads that we can follow up with. Someone had to pay the printing house to, you know, someone had to pay the mailing house. Someone had to pay the postage, hopefully. And, you know, we can follow up on those leads. But if you haven't been victimized, you know, some of those same leads are still there. And that, I don't want to discourage anyone from complaining. But you know, the truth of the matter is, you know, it's the people who have been victimized that are going to get, A, the attention, and B, they just offer more leads for us to follow.
Unfortunately, if you aren't quick enough to stop payment, and you mentioned that a lot of it goes overseas, you're pretty much bupkis, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, I don't. Yeah. I take a deep sigh and say yes. I mean, listen, just have a quick walk down, you know, how government works. I mean, if it goes overseas, you know, we have opportunities to investigate that, but we have to deal with not only the Department of Justice, but the Department of State. We have to deal with the other country's Department of State. We have to deal with their Department of Justice and their police forces. And that's to interview someone. If it's money, once it's gone overseas and then it's gone somewhere else and it's been taken out as cash and someone spent it, I mean, this is the reality, is the money's not just sitting in some bank account in some other country. If it were, it's going to take time, but it's possible we could get that back. But that's not what's happening. People are using it. People are spending it. And then it becomes very difficult to get back, even here in the United States, to be perfectly honest. If your money is, you've been defrauded, and the money stays here in the United States, you know, most of the time, most of these fraudsters, this is their lifestyle. They're spending it on fancy dinners, or renting fancy houses, or taking fancy vacations. They're leasing fancy cars. And unfortunately, I don't know how else to describe it other than to say that money sort of just disappears into the ether. I mean, you know, someone takes your $1,000 and buys a steak dinner for a couple for family members at a fancy steakhouse. Well, we can't get that back. It's disappeared into a meal. So, you know, if there's a lease on a car, you know, we seize cars, but what I've found over my almost 20 years is most of these guys don't own these cars. They're leased. And what does that mean? That means that there's actually an owner, a legitimate owner of that car, the car dealership, a leasing company. So we see the payments going to the car. We see your hard-earned money that you've been victimized going to a payment for a Lamborghini. But when we go, we can't go take that Lamborghini. It's owned by someone legitimate. It's their car. So that's the unfortunate reality, especially if it's overseas. Yeah.
All right. So in honor of March's National Consumer Protection Week, the takeaway, we're out of time.
The takeaway is please pay attention to the red flags. Don't fall victim. Don't send money that you haven't, you know, asked us, you know, you haven't purchased something, you haven't asked to send, you haven't initiated. You don't don't fall victim to gift card payments or Apple card payments or Bitcoin payments if that's not what you're in. And remember, if it's an investment fraud, and that is the theme of the week this year, you know, really question why are you as a consumer, as an individual being approached to invest in a great opportunity? Because if it was such a great opportunity, I don't want all the money going to Goldman Sachs, but they'd be there first in line. And I assure you that company would rather be funded by someone like Goldman Sachs than you at a seminar.
For more information, go to USPIS, that's USPIS.gov. And my guest today, George Clark, a postal inspector for the Philadelphia Division of the United States Postal Inspection Services.
There we go, yeah.
I got it. Again, go to USPIS.gov for more information. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.